Welcome to the Aquariumax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 73, recorded August 1st, 2011.
Greetings, everyone. We have a huge list of contributors once again, so let's say who's participating today.
Well, it's nice and international today, too. And this probably isn't the order that we'll do it in, but this is the order that we have them written down in. So we've got Stuart in the UK, Paul from Durham in the UK, Andreka, of course, from Oregon, Cliff, and we don't know where you're from, Cliff, but we're glad you're here anyways. Brian from Idaho, Jackson from Australia, Kevin from Connecticut, Juliet from Paris. So that's our first contributor from France.
Yeah, cool.
And Mick from Carnforth in the UK. So we'll see if we get through all that.
Yeah, if we
today.
Don't, we'll just have to hit it next week.
That's
but we'll
okay.
See. But that's not any sort of request to...
No.
Please keep them coming, everyone.
Yes.
We love it.
Okay, so let's go to Kevin's message first.
Hi, Russ. Hi, Kelly. This is Kevin from Connecticut, a listener over the last month or so to the Aquariumax podcast and now catching up on past issues. So my story is like many others out there, I'm sure, in that my start with this hobby was the trip to the local Walmart and picking up a 10-gallon tank and, of course, having no advice, doing everything wrong. So immediately getting the water in, pouring in some basic water treatment, throwing in a bunch of fish and watching them gradually pass away. Sadly. So I've now decided to sort of reboot and start all over again through the advice of a tremendous website. And if you want to share it, you can. The site that I'm visiting is aquariumadvice.com, and there's some really well-educated folks out there that provided guidance. So I guess the main message I wanted to share with listeners to the podcast, and particularly anybody newer or new-ish, is it's never too late to start fishless cycling. I had a couple of fish that had survived the battles, a couple of Chinese algae eaters, a green spotted puffer who shouldn't have been in the tank to begin with, needing brackish to begin with, and so forth. And what I was able to do was through a combination of using Free Cycle to find the local folks and then using local fish store site, I was able to find good homes for those fish. So I was able to get them out of my tank and off to much better environments for them to grow and survive. And quite frankly, the expense of sacrificing those fish out of, you know, the money I spent out of my wallet up front was very little. So having done that, I now have a light planted but fish empty 10-gallon tank that I am starting the fishless cycling process with. So hopefully that will go well. We'll be able to cycle it, get it fully prepared and ready, and then start introducing proper fish to the environment. Still not quite sure what I'm going to go with yet, but right now it's looking like probably a small school of neon tetras, maybe a couple of African dwarf frogs, and then I'm going to need a couple of friends for the algae side. Otters have been suggested. Ghost shrimp have been suggested. If you have other ideas, I'm open to that. And I'm also open to ideas on whether or not there would be a good showcase fish to include among that. And it can be a fish of the nano variety as well, you know, because it is only a 10-gallon tank. So I thank you for the time and look forward to hearing your comments. And we'll probably be an active participant in the show in the future. Thanks very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kevin. That was a great message. A lot of good stuff in there. I think it's commendable. It's awesome. I can't stress enough how great it is that you're going into fishless cycling. A lot of beginning aquarists don't even know what that is. And so it's great that you've gotten into the research and learned a little bit more about how fishless cycling works, and you're now practicing it. It's also, I agree 100%, fishless cycling is the way to go if you can. That's the way you should do it. It's much less stressful on the fish, and in turn, much less stressful on the aquarist. So, great way to go. I also like how resourceful it was to use Free Cycle to rehome those fish in a responsible way. your surviving fish so that you could reboot, as you put it, and start over with that. So thank you for bringing up that point, how important fishless cycling is. I was curious about a couple of things. As you mentioned, you're going to start your new setup, about which plants you had in there and about the lighting, because that could influence some things. But you wanted to know about some suggestions for your stocking, and I would say that I love neons. I love African dwarf frogs. It can be a little tricky to keep African frogs with fish. This is usually not so much from the fish's point of view, but from the frog's point of view, mostly because the fish tend to be more aggressive feeders than they are. And so anything that looks tasty to the African dwarf frogs is likely to become a snack for the fish if they are even reasonably interested in food. And they will feed from the bottom. And, you know, most fish will feed from the bottom if there's something tasty there. It can be done. Some people succeed with it, but usually they have to make some provision for protecting the frog's food from the fish. Some people put a small glass jar, like a baby food size jar, on its side and put the food in there. The frogs find it, and the fish, not all fish can find it. Or there are certain types of fish traps. There's one particular type that I'm thinking of, I can't recall the brand name, but uses small plastic rods to separate the inside of the trap from the outside. And you can remove those to an extent that the frogs can go in easily, but it's a little harder for the fish. And that might be one way to do it if you're going to do that. Personally, I would probably either go with the frogs or the fish. Not both, but, you know, as I said, some people succeed with it. But I've always found that my frogs do much better if I keep them without fish for that reason. At least long term. And that's, of course, what we're going for. One thing you might do if you do want to go for just frogs in there, you could probably put up to half a dozen frogs in a 10-gallon tank, a couple of olive nerites for algae control, and maybe some red cherry shrimp. I keep red cherry shrimp with my African frogs, dwarf frogs, and they do fine. They even breed not prolifically. Most of the young shrimp get eaten, but enough of them survive that there's, you know, kind of a constant population in there of maybe between half a dozen and 10 or so of adult shrimp, and then some small shrimp. So that would be an interesting way to do that if you decide to go for frogs. If you would rather go with fish, I would still suggest red cherry shrimp as an algae crew, and maybe an Amano shrimp, of course, once thoroughly cycled, which you're working on, and maybe an olive nerite or even two if the water's not too soft. And the olive nerite's one thing that you will have to scrape off small white egg cases off the glass. But they're really good at handling algae. And especially if you just get one, and you're lucky enough to get one that doesn't produce a whole lot of eggs. There's some debate on how that works, whether there are just females and males, depending on the species and so on. But I've had some that lay eggs for a little while and then completely stop and don't lay eggs for after that, and then you don't have to worry about it. And others that just keep going, so you never know how that would work, but they're great at removing algae. I would say with neons, you could do neons in a 10-gallon, but I would ideally say a 20-gallon long would be better. But, you know, you could probably handle that, half a dozen neons in there or so. They do like fairly cool temperatures for tropical fish, around 74 or so. And, of course, they prefer soft acid water, but that said, I've kept them in different water and had them spawn in it and so on. Some other possibilities you might look at are white cloud mountain minnows, which are a little like neons but not nearly as bright, but they're still a little bit more, they're pretty, and they're a little more forgiving in terms of water quality. Or, you know, they don't need acid soft water. They can do well in it, but they can also do well in harder water and so on. You said that someone had suggested Odos, and they are great if you can get healthy ones. But that can be hard. We're talking about Otocinclus.
Why is it hard to get healthy ones?
I think it's because most of them are wild-caught, and they seem to be caught in some way that stresses them out. Of course, wild-caught fish are going to be somewhat stressed out anyway, but they seem to take it hard. I don't know if it has to do with collection procedures or what. But if you can get healthy ones, they usually do great and are hardy and last a long time, but there's a high mortality right after you get them. So it's good to get some that have been in the pet store for a while and have done well. If you get a new shipment that comes in, the mortality is usually really high in the first few days. But once they get past that, they usually do great for a long time, and they are good at eating algae off of plants and glass. One thing you could do is to get them before you get your neons, and then quarantine them really thoroughly for a long time.
Oh, we have a surprise visitor who wants to say hi on the microphone. Gwen, did you have something you wanted to say?
Fish are friends, not food!
Bye, Gwen! That was our five-year-old who just popped downstairs to say hi. So, yes. You've all been greeted. Where were we?
Okay, we were with Otocinclus. I've also noticed that Otocinclus don't always do as well in a small tank as they do in a larger one, despite their small size. They're very diminutive, only a couple of inches long.
They just like to be able to roam.
I guess so. But I've had them do okay in 10-gallon tanks before. I just, you know, once you get past that initial difficulty at first. So, might want to quarantine them first.
So what would be a better choice?
Well,
that sounds kind of tricky, all told.
Right. The olive nerites and red cherry shrimp would be a pretty decent algae crew for a tank like that.
Okay.
That's what I might want to go with. Thank you, Kevin. Hopefully that helps, and we hope to hear from you again soon. And once again, thank you for bringing up the importance of fish cycling, which I really appreciate. Okay. Now, next we've got Paul. Paul is from Durham in the UK, and I think he's a new contributor too. Yes. And he says he's setting up a new tank that he's... He also did a fishless cycle.
Woohoo!
And he said after he had done that, he added some low-light plants, 5 guppies, 6 glow-light danios, and 2 bristlenose plecos. So I asked him a little bit more about this. He elaborated.
Wait. The glow light danios, are those the genetically engineered to glow in the dark ones?
I'm not sure if he's referring to the species of glow light danio or if he's referring to glowfish. It could be. But in the UK, I don't think they're allowed to have glowfish, so he's probably referring to the actual species glow light danio.
I think they're messed up.
Yeah. Well, he said that he...
I meant those kinds of fish, making those kinds of fish are messed up, not that... Those people over there in the UK are messed up. I realized that sounded ambiguous.
Oh, I knew what you meant.
Yeah, but I don't know if they knew what I meant.
Okay, well, now they do, so thank you for clarifying. He said when he got home, he noticed that one of the male guppies he had purchased looked a bit ill. And then after a few days, he died with an arched back and a bit of a fungus on his side, like a white thready mark. And now all the others have died, except for one.
All the other guppies or
all the other
fish?
Guppies. But the other fish in the tank seem fairly healthy, although they're flashing. So they're rubbing their bodies up against surfaces, like against the gravel or against decor and so on. And that is a bad sign.
Does that scrape scales off?
Usually it means they have some sort of skin irritation and they're trying to deal with it. And it can scrape their slime coat and so on or their scales. I've seen fish lose scales doing that. But it usually means that there's some irritation they're dealing with. So it could be some sort of disease in the water, some sort of parasite on their skin, something like that. He said that his water tests come up with 0 ammonia, 0 nitrate.
And it's just the guppies doing it?
No, the other fish
the
are
other
doing
fish
it.
The other fish are doing
are flashing
it, too. Okay.
And he's got his nitrates at 5, so it does sound like the cycle's gone through, and so it's not ammonia stress or anything like that. And he's wondering if he should add medication before he adds any more fish, and... what to add if so. And so I asked him some follow-up questions. He said he has a 32 U.S. gallon tank and that his pH is around 7.4 with an API test kit. And his water hardness from his local water supply website says it's soft to medium water. Okay. And he said the shop he got the guppy from is a really good supplier. It's not a big chain store with a good reputation. And he was going to buy Indler's live bears, but he didn't have any, so he got guppies. And there was one dead in the tank.
When he bought the guppies?
When he bought the guppies. So he said he's wondering if that would be a good idea to stay away from tanks if you just see one dead fish. but all the other fish looked fine. His temperature's at 77. Well, so here's the break.
Yep. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
All right, and so we're back and with Paul's question about guppies and his situation. I wouldn't add any medication to the tank yet because we need to figure out what's going on. Are your fish, your other fish, still flashing? Are they showing any signs of skin lesions or spots? Or
you said the guppies have all died
already? All but one.
All but one. There's one more guppy.
But there are glow light danios and Bursinose plecos. I'm not sure if the other... I think he said all the fish appear healthy now. One thing that I have to say about guppies, this relates to Juliet's question too. There are, well, in the years since guppies have been selectively bred for all these fantastic color varieties, the half blacks and the tuxedos and the tequila sunrise guppies and all these different things with different varieties of tails and so on, a lot of inbreeding has occurred, and that appears to have weakened the fish quite a bit. Now there are all kinds of diseases that guppies can get. The guppies that I keep, I just keep the wild types or mostly wild type guppies, and they're healthy as horses. But the ones that have been...
Do you have fancy guppies?
I would hazard
imagine
to guess
so.
That they are, yes.
Okay.
And there are various diseases that have been bothering them, even in more recent years, almost epidemic diseases. They've had... there's a guppy disease that's caused by a parasite that's a real big issue. There's another one that's like a real virus that causes big problems. There are bacterial infections like Myobacterium, the piscine tuberculosis kind of stuff. Guppies can get everything. They're weakened, and a lot of times people will breed them in water. You know, the fish farmers will keep them in water that's brackish to almost completely salt water. And guppies are adaptable that way.
They can live in all the way salt water?
They can, and it actually helps stave off certain parasites. I don't think they do ideally in complete strength seawater, but they can survive in that, and they can do really well if it's brackish to almost completely marine water.
And that helps kill off some of the nasties.
Helps them avoid some of the diseases, but at the same time, then they're used to living in that, and then they go to fresh water at the dealer, and then they go into water that may be different in your tank, especially
so
if it's medium
to soft.
So
why don't they just sell them as brackish fish if that's better for them?
Well, I think most people don't want to keep brackish tank. I mean, there are a lot of people who do, but in general, the aquarist who comes in wanting guppies wants to be able to add them to a community tank of freshwater fish. Something like that. So, that can be an issue. Guppies do get a lot of things.
So,
they're just not
if
as tough
he
as they used to be.
Slowly added some salt, like we've talked about with some other people, would that perhaps make sure that the other guppy doesn't get anything? Would that be bad for the other fish that he's gotten there?
Well, it could be. I'm not entirely sure how the glow light danios would do with it. I think Bursinose plecos could take some salt, although they're not from an area where they end up dealing with a lot of those. They tend to be Amazon basin sort of fish, but they're pretty adaptable. I don't know how they would... It depends on what plants he's got in there, too, because some plants are somewhat salt tolerant and some are not at all. I would say wait until you see more specific symptoms that you can narrow down before you treat with a medicine, but you could put a little prophylactic salt, just a very small amount. Like a teaspoon per gallon or something like that. Most fish can handle that. Most plants can handle that, but it might depend on what plants you've got, too. And
what about, do you think the guppy might still be carrying something that would spread to the fish? Should we put him in a quarantine tank so we can make the salt?
It could be.
Get him healthy?
It could be, but I wouldn't get any more fish until you figure out what the issue is completely with the diseases. Hopefully that helps. I would like to say more, but I'm a little unsure of the situation. I can say that in general, guppies that you buy in a store are not very tough, and they tend to react poorly to, you know, a lot of things.
Perhaps if he has more specific symptoms show up, he can let us know what those are. And
maybe we can help with that. I hope so. And, yeah, do keep us updated as much as you can, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, let's go to Andreka.
Okay. Now, she had a question that I liked about what is the ideal basic healthy tank setup for the aquarist with very little time. And she asked, is there such a thing? Would it be a betas or goldfish, a large tank with just a few fish? And I kind of want to turn this out to you as listeners and contributors. What do you think? What is your favorite low-maintenance tank that you've ever had? And we can talk about that more in a future show, because I think that's a great topic. But
so we'll come up with some of our ideas, and you guys give us some of your ideas, and we'll have a nice discussion.
Right. Now, she also has a new question. What are the top 10 stupid mistakes aquarists can make? And I would say there are no stupid mistakes, but there are lots of learning experiences from mistakes. And I've had many
of
them myself.
Again, I will say, you're so diplomatic.
Well, I've made a lot of mistakes, you know, over the years keeping fish. And she mentions one that they had after they had unbagged their fish, you know, acclimated them, floated them in the water and everything, and then put them into the tank. And then after a while, they heard a strange noise, a splashing noise next to the tank, and they looked in the bag and saw that there was a Corydoras catfish in the bag.
Still in the bag that didn't get out.
And it was fine. It had enough, you know, a little water in there, I guess. And it did fine. And so she was saying, well, there's a mistake that we can make. Mm-hmm. I've made similar mistakes before to that very one. And so that we can count that as number one, and we'll go down, and I've made a list of
number
a few more.
Number one being maybe not double-checking things?
Just making sure that when you release fish out of the bag that they're all gone. that's important. One is, and this is, you know, there could be many more things on this list, but these are just some of the things that came to me that I think are good ones. Number two, leaving a gap in the cover somewhere, whether it's in the back, between your filter...
The glass on the top of the tank.
And the cover glass or whatever. If you leave a significant gap, if a fish is capable of getting through it, and sometimes even if they're not, somehow they manage anyway, you'll eventually have a fish jump. Not all fish do it, but many do. You can't always tell by the species. Some fish that seem like there's no way they're going to jump, they do. So...
They jump out of the tank.
Yeah, out of the tank, onto the floor, and you get a crispy fish.
Bleh.
So, number three... Leaving a hose on fill or drain and leaving the room. I've done that more than once. So that's...
See all of my praise for that mat on the floor that absorbs all the water.
Yes. I don't do it often, but it does happen on occasion. Something crazy happens in the house while I'm
usually
changing.
It's because one of the kids comes in and says, ah, I need some over here, la 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 la.
And then something...
But usually you're pretty good.
Yeah. Number four, not using a proper stand rated for aquarium use for the size of the aquarium that you have.
That can actually be dangerous.
It can be very dangerous.
Depending on how big your tank is.
Yeah, remember that water with gravel and everything is on an average somewhere between 8.5 to 10 pounds per gallon, so it's a lot of weight and a lot of broken glass.
A 50-gallon tank.
Yeah. You got hundreds of pounds of water in there. And so using
normal
a proper stand...
Normal kitchen tables or counters and things often can't take that.
Right. And even, you know, fairly small tank can cause problems if what you're putting it on is not stable and rated to carry that weight. So that's a big one. Anything under 10 gallons or under, you can often find something as long as you're sure it's sturdy and level that will do it. But over that, you need to use a proper stand. And under that, it's still better to use a proper stand. Next one. I think this is number 5, right? Lifting a tank with more than a very teeny amount of water in it. That's a lot of weight, and you can crack your tank.
Break the tank.
Right.
Or hurt your back.
That's true, too. Lifting a tank by the rim, up the upper rim of the tank. It's not intended to handle that sort of stress. You need to lift it from the bottom. Otherwise, you can cause leaks or break it or rip the rim off or whatever. Another big one, bumping into a tank, especially when you're carrying something heavy. I did that a couple of times.
When I was much younger.
Okay, next one in. Leaving something plugged in when it shouldn't be, or vice versa. For example, leaving your heater plugged in and sticking your hand into the aquarium and doing maintenance in there. Usually nothing happens, but...
If it did...
It could.
You'd be in trouble.
Yes. And then the other one, maybe you're doing some filter maintenance and you unplug your filter and then you forget to plug it back in and you come back in the next day and you realize your filter's been off all day and your fish are all gasping at the surface. That's a bad one. Next one, rushing the cycling process, which relates to, you know, the fishless cycle that people have been talking about. That's a big
one. If we ever come up with Aquaramax merchandise, we should make a bumper sticker that says, fishless cycling rocks my world.
Yeah, we should. I like that. Let's do that. Cafe Press. Let's do it. It's cool. And the last one I'll put here is failing to do research before purchasing a fish. Just going into the store, ooh, that's cute.
Not knowing how big they get or what they get along with or how aggressive they are or things like that.
What they eat, all kinds of things like that. So hopefully that's a pretty good list. I think there are more
that
could
be
valid on the list too, but there you go. All right. Now, let's address Cliff's question a little bit. He wanted to know, he's had tanks for the past 30 years off and on, mostly fresh water. He does have a salt water in a 55 gallon. He has a Planet 37. I think of doing salt in a small tank between 10 and 20 gallons,
a nano salt water tank.
Yeah, and he wants to know about good books or resources. And I've done some salt water, but I asked on Facebook about this.
It was a smaller one too.
Yeah, it was a small. I did.
It
was five at first, and then we bumped it up to a 10.
To 10.
And we had it for several years. It actually came with us from Hawaii. Some of it did. Some of the stock in there. But Brian from Idaho responded about this, and he said he had a nano reef in a 20 long that he's been running for a couple of years. And he started 7 years ago in a 10 gallon, and he upgraded to a 20. And he says it's been a lot easier now, but one great book, which I've heard of and I recommend based on what I know about Bob Fenner, who I've communicated with, he's helped me out on a couple of things and so on, is The Conscientious Marine Aquarist. That's the author, is Bob Fenner. And that's a great book.
Can we put a link or that title or something on the resources page?
We can.
Page?
We'll do that. Okay. That'd be great.
Does he have a website? We should maybe link to his website, too.
Wet Web Media. He owns and runs Wet Web Media, so there you go. He also recommends, Brian does, A Pocket Expert Guide to Marine Fishes. He says it's good to walk into a store when you're going to buy a fish with a copy in your hands, and then you can figure out which fish can be kept in a nano tank or which you can keep together, which you can't keep together, and so on.
Oh,
Brian also put a pic of his water unit, his water storage unit on Facebook, so you can check that out. And we can put a link on the resources page, too, or you can just go to the Facebook page. And he also sent a great explanation of, more specifically, how pH burns work. So we'll put that on the resources page, too. So thanks, Brian, for responding to Cliff's question and for those other things, too. And thank you, Cliff, for joining the show as well.
This is something that's been nice about the Facebook page is that you guys all can get on there and
help each other.
And we've got this lovely little fishy community.
Yeah, I like that. It's cool. And now we've got one from Jackson in Australia.
Hi, Jackson.
So he said he set up a new tank. He's got 10 neon tetras in it, 5 white cloud mountain minnows, 4 harlequin resbora, 2 flying foxes, and 1 female guppy.
2 flying foxes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming those aren't the bats.
No, these are the ones that are related to Siamese algae eaters. They look a little like a Siamese algae eater.
I can't really picture those hanging out in a fish tank.
I guess they have them in Australia, but there you go.
Well, see, there you go. That's why I was a little bit confused there for a second.
Yeah, they're related.
I love the bat flying foxes. They're beautiful.
They are. These are beautiful, too. They're like a Siamese algae eater, like I was saying, a little more colorful.
Mm-hmm.
They do eat some algae, but not quite the same way that Siamese algae eaters
do. Why do they call them flying foxes?
I don't know. That's a great question. But they're beautiful fish. And he said that he's interested in one or more schooling species that is not at all aggressive, as he's had some very bad experiences with some fish that are not even considered aggressive. So he's looking for some timid species that would blend in well.
With the things that he
with
just
the things
told
that he
us
already
about.
Has.
How big is
right.
the tank?
I asked him that. I asked him a good question based on that, and he said he thinks it's about 120 U.S. gallons.
Wow.
So it's a nice big tank.
How fun would that be, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I would say a couple of things. One is, are you sure you really want to get any more species? I might just beef up your schools of what you've got, because sometimes that can be fun. Think of a tank, you've got 10 neon tetras. If you put 40 or 50 in there, that's really stunning. But since you asked, I'm going to give you some ideas. But I tend to think that a big tank looks better with one schooling species and then some highlight species. You know, if if I were to do a 55-gallon with neon tetras, I'd probably put like 45 neon tetras in there, a couple of bristlenose plecos, and a school of maybe some kind of cori that likes fairly cool temperatures. I think that would be awesome. Sometimes when you put several schooling species together, if the tank is big enough, sometimes they'll stay in their own schools. But sometimes just having numbers of other species, it kind of messes them up, and they don't school quite as stunningly and effectively. So you can think about that if you want. But you did ask, so I'm going to give you a couple of other species that could do well. I think some rainbow fish could do well. Dwarf neon rainbow fish can do fairly well in water conditions that are more similar to those of neon tetras. That suit them fairly well, and we have
and
a school
nice
of them.
And gentle.
They're not aggressive. They're aggressive eaters, but they're not aggressive to other fish, and they school really tightly. Look awesome. We have some in our 55 right here. A school of, I don't know, 18 or so. It grows slowly as they spawn, but they do great and they look nice. And I would say some coris. You know, choose a school of coris because coris really are Corydoras catfish, are schooling fish. In general. And if you get a school of one species, especially in a large tank like 120 gallons, you'll see them traveling together and staying together. If you have enough of them, you'll need to get at least six. I would say, and you haven't, your bioload's really low in the tank right now, I would get more than that. You know,
like
get
how many?
15.
Wow.
Something like that.
Okay.
That would be nice. Okay. So, thanks, Jackson. Hopefully that helps.
Oh, I think that we are just about out of time.
Yeah, I guess we're running low, aren't we?
So we will have to visit the messages from Juliet and Mick and Stuart next week.
Yep, but thanks for sending them, and we will get to them next week, we promise.
Look forward to that.
Yep. So that's all for this week, and remember, if there's nothing fishy going on at your house this week, fix that. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.